I had herniated my disc in my leg from the SED, and I had a primary opinion and a secondary opinion from neurosurgeon that said that I would have permanent nerve damage and would never heal. And I had to get surgery to stop it from getting worse. Otherwise, I'd have serious spinal issues. That was like 15 years ago or something like that. That's 20 years ago. Almost 20 years ago. So, yeah. And then I literally had like 75, 80% of the feeling back in my thumb within doing 2 or 3 weeks of doing Panchakarma. And then, so we kind of knew that, wait, this is like, our bodies are magical. We just kind of got to get out of their way.
Welcome to Feed Your Wild, an immersive journey to help you remember your own medicine and awaken your intuitive healing gifts. I'm Vanessa Rodriguez, and join us for heart-centered, real conversations exploring intuition and spirituality, health and wellness, astrology, herbalism, and nature-based practices that will transform your health and life. Our mission is to inspire, empower you, and help you expand your spiritual and intuitive connection to its fullest expression so that we can build a more beautiful world together. Get ready to feed all parts of your wild self. What if businesses of today operated from ancient wisdom and spiritual principles that underlie the patterns of the cosmos? What kind of world would exist if there was no separation of spirituality from any other realm of life? It's these questions and more that we explore on today's episode of the Feed Your Wild podcast with the dynamic duo of Dr. Vrinda Devani and Mitesh Raichada of Ayurprana, an online educational platform and community that provides a modern approach to personal wellness inspired by the ancient sciences of Ayurveda and yoga. Welcome to our conversation where we have fun traversing the confluence between Ayurveda, wellness, spirituality, business, and money. If you're not familiar with Ayurveda, the Sanskrit word Ayurveda translates to life knowledge or the science of life. It's an ancient healing system rooted in India that has been practiced for thousands of years. And Ayurveda's scope really encompasses all realms, just as many traditional medical sciences throughout the globe have: physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. There was no separation. In this way, it really addresses the whole person, body, mind, and consciousness. Like many ancient sciences, there's also an understanding that we are woven within the web of life and all of creation, including the cosmos. And Ayurveda has a beautiful way of bringing these understandings to life and to practice. In my own experience, I have done a lot of self-study in Ayurveda. It has been one of the initial and primary forces that has brought me to where I am today in my path, but especially in my trajectory as it relates to my career as a health coach and holistic clinical nutritionist. Ayurveda, to me, just made sense. And I feel it's resurgence in a big way, and of course, alongside yoga, is a testament to not only the efficacy of these time-tested principles, but also how much the world would benefit from the teachings and understandings of Ayurveda. In this conversation, we traverse the confluence between Ayurveda, wellness, spirituality, business, and money, starting with the fascinating upbringing and personal stories of healing of our two guests, Mitesh and Vrinda. From the ashram to the boardroom, from surgery in the OR to apprenticing in Ayurvedic medicine, Mitesh and Vrinda share how their spiritual upbringing carved paths that led to the rich integration of ancient wisdom with modern healthcare and entrepreneurial spirit. We explore the necessary path from idealism to actionable life and business practices, unraveling the synthesis of personal development, spiritual practice, and professional success. We cover the significance of community and connection and rituals in transforming our perception of challenges in our life, especially when it comes to money and professional endeavors. And ultimately, how bifurcation in various realms of our life leads to disharmony, pathology, and disease. Mitesh and Vrinda's stories and body of work are dynamic examples of how the incorporation of Ayurvedic principles can thrive in the most unconventional settings. Next week, on March 7th, I have the honor and pleasure of being a guest thought leader and speaker inside of the Living Wisdom membership, which you'll hear about in our conversation. I was invited by our mutual friend and colleague, Tyler Waters. If that name sounds familiar to you, that's because I had Tyler way back when on the podcast on episode 47. That episode was called The Medicine of Place, Place-Based Herbalism, Imaginative Realms, and Land Connection with Tyler Waters. Tyler is a dear friend, personal friend of mine. He's a folk herbalist, wildcrafter, naturalist, educator, and mentor with over 2 decades of field experience and 15 years of teaching experience. And he is very much woven into the world of Ayurprana as well as Banyan Botanicals. Tyler is also faculty at the Ayurvedic Institute, and he's just an all-around incredible human with such a depth of knowledge and wisdom himself. He reached out to me and invited me to teach a class inside of their beautiful Living Wisdom membership. And each month, there is an exploration of one of the foundational pillars of health and how it is impacted by seasonal changes in nature, nutrition, and climate. And this class in this season is connected to kapha season. And the topic is the power of nourishment. So in that class, we're diving deep into nutrition, the connection to nature, living with one's environment, gardening, seed to harvest. Tyler is going to speak into the importance and power of composting in other classes that he'll be teaching. It will be a really fun exploration of how to deepen one's relationship to nature and the essence of human nutrition, feeding the body, mind, and the spirit alongside the spring awakening. It's going to be a lot of fun. And this is just one of the many thought leadership classes they have, in addition to monthly storytelling, yoga, music, theory, and practice and rituals, and integration with support with talks and Q&A with Vasan Lad. I highly encourage you to check it out. You can go to liveayurprana.com to learn more. There's a whole lineup waiting for you for the rest of the year, and you can click the link that is in the show notes to learn more. One very quick announcement before we dive into our conversation, and that is that I still have a couple of spots for my private one-on-one Akashic mentorship for healers and practitioners. It's called Awaken the Oracle Within. You get to choose the length, 3, 6, or 12 months. And this is my highest level of support. So it's literally me in your back pocket, assisting you in tapping into your next level intuitive gifts as an oracle, what that means for you, with crystal clarity in your highest purpose as a healer, practitioner, and light worker. These are bespoke mentorship. So they really are customized and tailored to you, where you are, what your goals are. I'll help assist you in bringing out the vision and connecting you with the highest timeline that is available. You'll be initiated into working with the Akashic Records and divine support to navigate these realms, spread your wings, and to create your soul's body of healing work. There's so much that is included in with this mentorship, in addition to other masterclasses and trainings that I have, aside from the Akashic Record foundational training and initiation. So if this is speaking to you, I encourage you to learn more. Go over to wildlyrooted.com/oracle. And you can also shoot me a DM. I'm over at Instagram at wildlyrooted if you are genuinely interested in this and just want to talk things out and ask questions. I'm available to support you. This is one of my favorite ways of supporting people. One-on-one, is there's nothing like it. And I have seen previous clients make quantum leaps in their life and their work. And so I'm really honored to call in a couple of more folks who are ready. And I'll see you on the other side. There's a little application. I encourage you to fill it out, even if you're just exploring and wanting to ask questions. And we'll get everything answered for you. Of course, all the links are in the show notes. All right, without further ado, let's get into this incredible talk with Mitesh and Dr. Vrinda. Welcome back, everybody, to Feed Your Wild. I am very excited to dive into this conversation that I have this bubbly feeling that there's going to be some new territory that we're going to touch in on today. So I'm really excited about that. Today we have Vrinda Devani, MD, and Mitesh Raichada. So let me go ahead and introduce the two of you. Oh, by the way, this is the first time we're having two people on as guests at the same time. So you popped my cherry on that one. Thank you, guys. This is really exciting. Okay, so Mitesh Raichada. Mitesh's passion for Ayurveda was first cultivated while studying to become a certified practitioner under Vasan Lad. An enthusiastic and unyielding seeker of knowledge, Mitesh studied Indian philosophy. Let's see if I got this one. At Tatvagna Vidyapith in India.
Oh, that's perfect. Okay. No, that's right. I love it. Yeah.
Good. Cool. Jyotish with Heart Defoe holds a Reiki level one certification and has undertaken intensive clinical immersion programs with Vasan Lad in India. These days, Mitesh is busy being the executive vice president of the Ayurvedic Institute, but before that, he co-founded a highly successful real estate and hospitality company. His zeal for building powerful leaders and creating mindful business cultures overflows into the classrooms he leads with compassion and insight. And when not studying, teaching, or practicing, you can find Mitesh playing his bass guitar or enjoying the limitless beauty of nature. Welcome, Mitesh.
That was amazing. I was like, who is that guy? It sounds amazing.
Yay. Yeah, take one, right? That's awesome. And as a board-certified obstetrician and gynecologist, Vrinda Devani, MD, has a passion for women's health and empowering women towards vibrant health and living. She has been extremely fortunate to study Ayurveda under Dr. Vasan Lad, completing both the Ayurvedic Studies Program Levels 1 and 2, and further her studies in Ayurvedic women's health with travels in Nepal with Dr. Sarita Shrestha. She serves as the medical director at Soham Mountain Healing, an Ayurvedic resort specializing in Panchakarma and Ayurprana, an online education platform, which we will get into later today. She also has a love for yoga and is a certified Ayur-yoga instructor. She truly enjoys mentoring and teaching budding practitioners while also practicing integrative medicine in her own private practice. Dr. Devani has also been recognized as an expert in Ayurvedic women's health, being invited to speak and write for various prestigious audiences. Welcome, Dr. Vrinda.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Well, as everybody can tune in already, there is so much you guys have already done and accomplished. And even in terms of the weaving that you have done cross-discipline-wise, bridging Ayurveda with business and with Western medicine. So there is such a wealth of experience and knowledge here. And today we were really wanting to get into just that, this intersectionality, if you will, and bridging, which I feel like it already is, and it's more about stopping the compartmentalization, stopping the bifurcation, but really bringing awareness and light and practice in an embodied way to the intersection between spirituality and business and health and all walks of life. So I would first love to start off with some storytelling and ask each of you, how did you first come into, well, we could say, how do you know each other? Like, what's the story behind that? And you two coming together. And then through that, maybe exploring this love and passion and practice of Ayurveda, and then integrating that with the work that each of you do.
All right. Well, I've known Brenda since she's a baby, believe it or not. So, since she was just like a little baby. And we grew up in the same community in Richmond, Virginia. You know, we had kind of like a Vedic spiritual, almost like a Sunday school that happened every Sunday. And I was actually her facilitator when I was young, and she was like really young. So that's how we met, like through the, like, yeah, the same community. And then later on in life, she married my cousin, who's like my baby brother. Like, we grew up in the same house. So we've got this like total karmic weaving. I don't know if you want to add on. We're super close. Like, I knew her before I knew my cousin, actually, because he migrated from Africa. So I knew her before she married my cousin. So interesting.
Yeah. And really, this community that we grew up in, most of our friends circle that we're still with today, was through this spiritual community. And growing up Indian here in the United States, it's so easy to just like feel like you have to conform. You know, in our homes, our parents were very Indian. You know, we ate Indian food, we spoke the Indian language, our cultural, you know, how we're brought up. And I feel like this community is what really helped ground us in the thought of our ancestors. And so just having this common background and experience really bonded us in ways that we can't even describe. And most of the guys studied in his ashram, and he had just really powerful messages to them. And it's really what's kind of made us who we are today.
Yeah, that same spiritual teacher, really, there's one thing that stood out for me when I was young. And the main message was that you have infinite potential within you, and you can do anything. And like, not to limit yourself. And when you're a young adolescent growing up and you hear that message, there's something that if you keep hearing it over and over and over again, at some point, there's a little voice inside of you that says, wait, maybe I am limitless. Like, maybe I can do anything in the world. And so most amazing, like non kind of dogmatic, kind of like a radical spiritual teacher, in that being a youth and kind of feeling that energy was like so empowering. And it really actually was probably the bond of many of us that work in Ayurprana. There are a few of us that actually studied in the ashram in India with him for about 2 years. And it was just very like transformative. But
when they're like 20.
Yeah, when we're 20 years old, it was awesome. It was the best 2 years of my life. It was just absolutely amazing. But that's kind of, I would say, that how we know each other, right?
And yeah, and I think one of the biggest messages that he left with the guys when they're leaving India was just be one. And you could share this story way better than I can, but I feel like that's the message that carried through even in the hospitality company. Yeah. I mean, I was in training the whole time. So, you know, I was part of the collective, but I wasn't working in the business, but just the way they ran the hospitality company, that was, it wasn't just about running hotels.
Yeah.
It was about creating leaders, was the motto.
Yeah.
And being one, and like going, showing up to the soccer games of the manager's kids, you know, like, it was be one. What creates that separation? Like, observe it and move past it and really like own the next person as your own.
Yeah, it forged a lot of our identity, because, you know, like those Zen masters, they'll ask a question and then you're just kind of, your consciousness just swirls and it kind of goes into this space of like, why was that question asked to me? So our teacher, like, he may see us after a year or 8 months. And with everybody else, he might be like, hi, how are you? How's the family? With our little clan, he would say, have you become one yet? And we didn't even know how to even answer that question, you know? Like, we were like, how do you even answer that question? And for years, whenever he saw us, the first thing he would say to us was, have we become one yet? So we endeavored to start our company through our first company through these principles of unity. And so it was really interesting. We didn't really have business degrees or anything like that. So another thing we used to do is we used to go to these camps, and we ran camps for youth for about 7 years. And we started off with 200 kids and 400 kids. And like, our college years really went into running these camps, and it culminated about 700 youth from 14 to 18. What happened was, when we bought our first business, it was a hotel, and we didn't have business degrees. So what we decided to do, we just started running our business like a camp. And like, that's the only thing we knew. So we'd get all of the employees together in the morning. They were like, what are these people doing? Like, we were in our early 20s. we'd make a big circle and everybody would like hoot and holler and we would do affirmations, right? We would do like gratitude. And then, you know, that's really interesting. For the first week or two, everyone's just like in shock that we're running a company this way. And then after about a week or two, they just loved it. Like we would like dance, we would play music. It was awesome. And then so slowly we, by running a business with a total different paradigm and actually this unity consciousness that we learned from our teacher, we're very lucky. We're very blessed. When we took the business over, it was losing about $200,000 a year. And then by doing all of these things, like within a year, we were like highly profitable. So we learned then that if you just treat people by the divine light that they are, and you create a container for them to blossom, and you have a culture of gratitude and inspiration and leadership development, that everything kind of falls in line, you know, profit, human resources. And then a lot of our managers, they would get promoted very quickly, or they would go to other companies and become superstars. And many people have gone on to start their own company. So that part of our lives was just very, very, very formative and exciting. And it kind of changed our paradigm on running a business. Because we're in the Ayurvedic field right now, it's people that graduate from our school, they have to have some kind of exposure to entrepreneurism, if that makes sense, because they're all going out and starting their own practice. And we want them to be successful. Anyone that studied Ayurveda in our schools, they've given up so much to study this ancient science. And so they have to be able to make a living. And so I think the business exposure and the lessons that we've had help us impact our graduating students and people studying Ayurveda.
I mean, it's blowing my mind because I feel like how unique and really rare this story is and how it's expressed currently in our world. And clearly there's so much dysfunction, especially when it comes to business and money. And I also just have to say, back to this karmic piece, when I connected with Tyler recently to talk about the class that we're going to be doing, and I mentioned something like totally assuming that the two of you were brother and sister. I didn't know you. I had no concept. And I was just like, oh yeah, like, so is her brother. And he's like, brother, they're not blood related. I was like, they're not? Like, where did I get, like, clearly you must have some sort of past life where you were siblings and you're like family connection.
We argue all the time, like brother and sister, like even at work. I mean, it is definitely like, so for sure, there's some past life stuff going on, no doubt.
That's hilarious. I felt a little embarrassed because I was like, oh, I just made this total assumption, you know? But so coming back to this, I just hear people saying, this sounds incredible. And to have that, those literally informative experiences as young people and children, to be exposed to that depth and level of like a higher consciousness, really, because it's like remembering who you really are. And even just those opportunities to contemplate the questions that we may not understand in the moment, but as you're saying, sort of circle in our consciousness and awareness is such a gift. Mitesh, I want to start with you. How did you decide to get into business in the first place? I mean, it sounds like that there was some exposure, but like, what was that first impetus? And then obviously it worked out. It's part of like what you're here to do. So how did that happen?
So at first I was going to go to med school, and then I got into med school and I figured all of that out, but I decided to take a kind of like a skip year in between. And that's where I went to the ashram and I studied the ashram. And then at the ashram, they're like, education and youth is everything. Like the whole world depends on if you can inspire a youth, if you can have some type of container for them for like self-exploration and for aspiration, then the whole world can really be impacted by that. So I was like, you know, you're 20 years old, you're hearing all of this philosophy. So I told my parents, I'm dropping out of school. I was like, I was a philosophy major then. And when I came back from the ashram, I was studying education. So I was this idealist, you know, and I was learning. I had so many credits in college, but no degree. And then I got married and life became very real for me. Like the morning that I woke up after being married, literally I woke up and I kind of had this anxiety that, I mean, I'm just studying philosophy. Like I dropped out of school. I was going to be a doctor. Now I'm not going to do that. So I just woke up and my wife is this amazing human being. And I thought, oh my God, like I'm going to have to get a job, you know? And so like literally, I mean, it wasn't anything more glamorous than the fact that I just felt like I needed to take care of my family. And then business for me, my mom and dad ran businesses all the time while I was growing up, like different types of businesses. So then I realized, okay, well, let's go into business as opposed to trying to get a job, because I had no real qualifications from a college perspective. You know, I'd taken a bunch of classes. So I guess my wife, my beautiful wife, you know, was my impetus to say, oh my gosh, you got to get your act together. And so we joined a business, and I think it was one of the greatest things that could have ever happened, because I'm so proud of the type of, we were in West Texas, which is like Bible Belt, you know, and literally we have a meeting every morning where people are meditating, and like to pull this off and where we pulled it off on, I think it was an absolute miracle. We didn't call it anything. We would just say, oh, we're just gonna, you know, watch our breath. Everyone, come on, let's just see, do we like get de-stressed? And so we integrated a lot of kind of spiritual practice. And I think that's one of the things you can divinize. The whole concept of divinizing a room or divinizing a workspace, anything can be divinized. Like the judgments that we have on things. And I think that's what we did. We started a business. We were in an ashram, me and a few of my friends. And that was the impetus between the ashram and then the need to make money. I think it all kind of merged into our first business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Vrinda, for you, you obviously are a practitioner and medical doctor, but have also gone deeply into the Ayurvedic route and integrating all of that. So how did you start on that path? Because it sounds like both of you had similar upbringings and exposure. Like, what did that look like for you?
Yeah. So I actually wanted to go into politics.
We could have used you, by the way.
It's not too late. It's not too late.
And then I quickly realized, well, my mom quickly reminded me how naive I am. And I was good at science, you know, like that just came naturally to me. And so I was like, you know, I'm going to do medicine and then I'm going to do stuff in third world countries. You know, I'm going to work with the World Health Organization, or that's where like the world will bridge for me, but basically serving in underserved areas. But luckily, like it was during my first year in medical school, Mithish had a slip disc in his neck and he was losing sensation in his fingers. And around the same time, one of our really good friends, she just finished medical school and they were in business together, her husband and Mithish. So they went to check out Dr. Lesso and was like, you should check this guy out. He's pretty cool. And they went there and they came back and they're like, there's something to this guy. And so they're like, Mithish, why don't you go do Panchakarma? Like, what do you have to lose? It's like this or surgery, you know, one or the two. Mm-hmm. Gained like 80% sensation back, I believe, after the 2 weeks of Panchakarma. So we're like, okay, there's something here. And so all the girls, we went to a seminar and we're like, let's take a year off. You know, they've got to take, like, have this amazing experience in the ashram. Let's do our own one of those experiments. So we spent a year. I took a year off between my first and second year of medical school. And that really, like, to have that perspective so early in the medical training really just shifted and it set my perspective on healing, you know, like how I viewed the world. And so going through medical school, everyone would be like memorizing all the symptoms of rheumatoid arthritis. I'm like, oh, Pitta, you know, Nama, like I get it. It just made sense to me. And so just that perspective, it just stayed with me through all my training. And then I finished the training after my residency. But it was kind of one of those things, like, I feel like with my career, I have an idea what it'll be like. And the universe is like, no, you need to go in this direction. So I've kind of been like, okay, you just tell me where to go. Because as soon as I think I'm going to do something, it's like, no, you're going to serve here now. No, you're going to serve. It's always been with Ayurveda included. If it feels right, it's always been like, and it's not just practicing. It's how do we bring this to the world in a more full form? Like, how do we open people's eyes to the beauty of this? And Ayurveda, in the end, it's just a way of looking at the world. Like, we incorporate all sorts of stuff. We incorporate, like, functional medicine and then this and that. And it's just a framework of how to view it all. It's not like we're not purists.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't think it's appropriate for me to brag on you. You know, maybe you can edit this part out, but like, I'm so inspired by Vrinda. Like, I love Vrinda. Like, she literally is in the operating room one day, and then she's in a boardroom the next day, and then she's teaching in a classroom the next day. And she inspires me so much. And everything that she does with so much like passion and awareness, you know, and she's like, that doesn't sound like the meeting we had an hour ago. But she inspires me so much. Like, I love this girl, you know, and for her to hold so much, and she doesn't give any less in the boardroom than she does, like, if she's at the hospital or if she's teaching a class. And it's just really inspiring. It's more about being a good person and impacting. And I think that's just a great lesson for all of us, you know, is that wherever you walk into, like, you can do it with a certain benevolent spiritual demeanor. Yeah, you're awesome.
It's power community in the end. You know, we all make each other better here. I really believe that.
Well, it kind of comes back to what you're touching in on, like our topic today, being all of yourself in every aspect of your life, always. And so professionally and personally in your community. And yeah, absolutely, that community is required for that, right? Like calling in the help and support. It sounds like, well, clearly, Ayurveda is a culmination point, like for the two of you and in coming together and what we're talking about today. How did that happen, though? Like, how did the bridging of the two of you and this shared path begin to unfold?
Early on, I had herniated my disc in my neck, Brenda said, and I had a primary opinion and a secondary opinion from a neurosurgeon that said that I would have permanent nerve damage and would never heal. And I had to get surgery to stop it from getting worse. Otherwise, I'd have serious spinal issues. That was like 15 years ago or something like that. That's 20 years ago. It was about almost 20 years ago. Yeah. And then I literally had 75, 80% of the feeling back in my thumb within doing 2 or 3 weeks of doing Panchakarma. And then, so we kind of knew that, wait, this is like magical. Our bodies are magical. We just kind of got to get out of their way and we have to nurture them and create a certain environment. So we kind of knew of this. Brenda, and I guess how many of you did you study Ayurveda with Dr. Ladd? Like
8 of us.
There's 8 of our friends that we said, hey, let's just send all of our wives. And then the wives were like, they're like so excited, and they kind of went and they kind of partied it up for like a year, and they studied Ayurveda, you know, like a humble apartment or whatever the case may be. That's how we primarily got connected. And then what happened was my spiritual teacher, like when I was in the ashram, had said, divide your life into 4 segments, right? So the first segment, be a learner through and through, like, you know, like kids go to school or whatever. Second segment, kind of produce for yourself and your community and kind of be a caretaker of your community. The third part of your life, give back from a wisdom perspective. And the fourth part of your life, pack up your bags and just kind of let go of things, like leave the world better. And so what happened was, like, you know, if someone's going to have an average lifespan of 80 years, when I turned 40, I decided to take a sabbatical. And during the sabbatical, I went back to study with Dr. Ladd because I never got to when all of my friends, all the girls went together. And so my sabbatical went from 1 year to 2 years. I think my sabbatical is running like 8 years now. I think I'm 8 years into my sabbatical. And I think 3 years later, some of the people I worked with called me and said, you're never coming back, are you? And I was like, well, and that's kind of what ended up happening. It really convinced a lot of people, like my friends and colleagues, to come study Ayurveda as well. And so we actually are now kind of completing our transition, like hospitality and business, into Ayurveda, you know, and it's kind of like our lives now. So I think it was just kind of like that third stage of life, midlife crisis, I guess you could say. What do we walk this earth for? And then I'm only child, so I'm always dragging people with me. I'm just like, I can't do it myself. So,
yeah, I hear you on the midlife piece. I'm right there. And a lot of like looking at coming with legacy, right? If you're wanting to leave a legacy, it's really face to face with that. And you are creating a legacy. I mean, it's here. It's very clear. It's very palpable when we tap into like the work that you guys are creating together and with your community and others. So for people who are listening and tuning in and thinking, and maybe who aren't as familiar with Ayurveda, and Vrinda, you said Ayurveda is really like way of life, right? This concept of like how to live life. And you could say even like a blueprint for understanding the world and how to live in the world. How does that concept weave into business itself? You know, so we're talking about this spirituality and business and people thinking these are two separate things. How are you guys actually practice? Like, what does it actually look like to integrate those and to live it?
Well, I'll take a step back. And the short answer is it's a journey for me. So growing up, I didn't have much like awareness and mental space in money and business. You know, like I grew up in my parents really took care of everything for me. Like my dad was like, just study. That's like the only thing you should really worry about. And my mom was like, well, she should learn how to balance a checkbook, you know? But he was like, just study, study, study. So I don't feel like I really had a relationship at all with money in that form until more recently. And I realized, like, I was just having a conversation with someone like several months back that, you know, P&Ls, like they scare me. Like I don't like looking at them. And I realized it's just this like, while I love being someone who can take something and do something with it to be responsible for the financial side, there's something scary about it for me personally. I was like, that's not my department. Someone else just take care of it. I'm going to just like, I'll be the doer. You tell me what to do and I'll do it. And what I've realized, I've really kind of explored this relationship with money in the last 6 months to a year. And it's really this like amazing energy. Lynn Twist, there's this like author that I love. So if anyone hasn't read her book, Soul of Money, it's like such a beautiful book. And she talks about money as currency. Current is an energy. And if you know how to like love it and nurture it, it will grow also. So like what you have, if you love and nurture it, it'll grow. And it may not grow in amounts, but it'll grow in the way it impacts people. And it likes to have attention. It likes to be nurtured. It doesn't like to be like, you just kind of go in that part of the world and you go here. And so I think that's just been kind of my exploration of it. And when I found myself starting to explore, there are times when I get very task-oriented and I almost feel like my lower chakras start to take over. And it's like about survival. And it's like, got to get the bills to pay and stuff. And I found myself getting unhealthy. And when I kind of pull myself out of that and think about this energy more from this like higher chakra place, like it's serving the whole world, I just feel like I'm able to like nurture it more. I'm able to kind of be like, oh, like let's bring it here. Let it serve here. Okay, we need some resources so it can grow more, just like a plant, like give it a little bit more water, give it more soil to grow in. So what I found though is that when you either block that energy or it accumulates too much in excess to the point where you're not responsible with it, just like anything in excess, like too much food, too much water, too much anything isn't going to be good for something, it creates disease. So in Ayurveda, there are main ways that disease can get created. It's accumulation, it's clogging of channels, it's blocking of channels. So when it doesn't flow in a harmonious way, then disease accumulates. So anyway, that's been my exploration with this. If we're thinking about our life bifurcated, like it doesn't, you can't, you know, because it's just an energy that's part of us. And if we don't have a healthy relationship with it and say, well, in this part of my life, I can do this. In this part of my life, I'm this way. No, like in this part of your life, you're existing lower chakras. In this part of your life, you think you're existing from higher chakras, but like, look at the like inconsistency here. And wherever there's blockage, wherever there's over like excess, I feel like disease does occur.
Mm-hmm. And it's the whole thing, you know, about in the East, there's like, oh, there's so many gods. There's one divinity that flows through all, but literally we call money Sri Lakshmi. So Sri Lakshmi is this beautiful goddess, like this majestic, mysterious, worthy of worship and reverence. It's not just a dollar bill that you exchange for something, right? And so I do think the global paradigm of how we look at money and knowledge, because think, we think that you can't own your mother. Does that make sense? You can't own it. You tend, you take care of her. You love her. You look after her. You make sure that she is where she needs to be. And the same thing with wisdom, like Saraswati. So Sri Saraswati is like wisdom. And what happens is that none of us really own anything. Honestly, this is such a joke. It's like, it's not real in the sense that we're trustees. We are around it, right? And then for example, like if I'm in a community, I should take care of somebody if they have a need for a surgery or whatever the case may be. And that's what being a trustee of money, and it takes a lot of the pressure off. And the same thing with wisdom. I think wisdom is something that we channel as opposed to some, look how much I know. Well, if you get hit on the head with a brick, you're not going to know that anymore. Does that make sense? So there's some divine gift, like the spell that's going on. And I think living into that reverence for wisdom and reverence for money stops it from becoming, hey, look at me. Look how rich I am. Or look at me. Look how much I know. So I think having the polytheistic kind of reverence for everything, you know, the god of trees and the god of Ayurveda and the god that's the sun and the god that's the moon. And it kind of blisses you out after a little while because you're just dancing around with that. So I think the major paradigm is really important. I think what happens, I've noticed this in a lot of people, even people that are on a spiritual path, if you have a schism, like if you actually have a work set of moral values and a home set of moral values, and then you try to have a different set of moral values when you're meditating, you're always going to have this underpinning of discomfort. You're not going to know where this anxiety comes from is because I'm creating a schism. I can't not be, I have to be just as nice to a team member at work as I am when I'm doing seva or service somewhere or that type of thing. So I think those schisms actually stop us from feeling source or feeling the divine or actually. And so I think it's so important, actually, corporations get a really bad rep. If you're good at running a business, go out there and run it. Be kind, be generous. Why do you need unions? Like have benevolent organizations and company. Why should people have to fight for their wealth? Does that make sense? And I think a lot of that, when that schism is not there, then I think that you actually can live a much different life in business, right?
Yeah. Like I was saying, I do think it's a journey. It's not like we're talking this way and we exist this way all the time. Like literally just like maybe a week or two ago, I remember laying in bed worrying about something financial related. And I could feel like my heart was racing more, not racing, but it was beating faster. I felt like throbbing. I was like, oh, I've never had high blood pressure in my life before. It's always been like the 90s. I was like, this is probably what high blood pressure feels like. And it was a sign to me that it was like, whoa, you're going back down, you know, in terms of like the survival chakras, like pull yourself out of it. So I think it's a flow and it's an exploration, you know, that I just encourage a lot of people just to be aware of the relationship and the dance and just kind of explore like being aware of it so that you can try to pull yourself out of that when that happens to be more in the spirit that Mitesh just talked about, you know, just like this being in the flow of it all.
There are so many points that you guys brought up that I think are really important. And we're seeing, I think, pop up in different languages. You know, there's like different lexicon for a lot of this. For example, the schism that you're talking about and this sort of that anxiety that comes up and that connection to the nervous system. And there's so much now around tending to the nervous system and trauma healing when it comes to all these other things that you wouldn't necessarily connect trauma healing and nervous system work to, right? Like business, like money. But one thing that you touched on so deeply, Verinda, is I think a very common, well, we can call it wound maybe, programming around this relationship with money as it pertains to women. I mean, we have shown up, I think, in hordes since the 60s and the 70s, right, with like independence era as a provider. I could show up as provider too. I can do the job and provide for my family as well and tend to my family and all the things. But there's still that schism that you're touching on, Fish, which is almost like inborn felt disconnection from money. Like there's like kind of an ickiness around money or a fear around money and needing to work on that. What is that about? You kind of gave us a framework, Verinda, really, which is about body awareness, energy awareness, so that we can become aware of that schism. We can become aware of the anxiety instead of it running us. Even just touching into the different centers, the chakras, and where are you feeling it most active? I think that's a really powerful practice for people. It's like, even right now, think about the bills you got to pay, like that bill that's sitting in your inbox. Where are you feeling that in your body? And how can you transform that? Because really, it's just more about your perception of it, right? But as you're saying, it's a practice because it's like so ingrained. That's reflected in my own experience too, absolutely. So talking about schisms, I feel like we have a global schism, right? We just have a collective schism when bifurcation happening all over the place when it comes to especially spirituality and anything else. Clearly, I feel like this is part of your mission is to bring this reintegration and this remembrance. But how does that happen for it to be seeded into the global stage? For people who are listening, you know, who are at home, maybe they have their own jobs or they're stay at home or they're practitioners themselves. How can they begin to integrate or even think about being a change agent in some way to bridge back those two things?
I think the first thing starts with intention that I want to divinize as many things in my life as possible. And part of that would be my work life. And one of the things, like even the students that come to the Ayurvedic Institute, they really get stressed out. We have really hard exams. You know, they're not easy because we want people to graduate and really feel confident in their skill. So we always tell them that, listen, when you sit down with your book, first of all, bow to that book because it's Saraswati. Put her on the desk, light a deep, and then light incense. And then when you do that, then you with grace open the book. And this might sound like overly simplistic, but honestly, then that study, play some music in the background and then study like a worship. You know, does that make sense? And today I was studying something. I danced out of standing up desk. I was dancing and doing it. And I think that ritual, bringing two things, like ritual into any practice. And then whenever you're deep in meditation, whenever you go on a retreat or however you felt unity consciousness, you have to bring it. For example, one of the ancient Vedic traditions is that if you buy a tool of work, there's an auspicious day to buy the tool of work. When you brought that tool of work at home, you divinize it by putting certain Gunku, and you do a ceremony for that. Like, it's a keyboard, it's a computer, it's like a new sign that goes in your store window. So I think, like, we are walking amongst sacredness all of the time. And then to honor that sacredness with ritual will change how we do absolutely everything. That's one thing. And the second thing is back to the spiritual teacher that I had. Every human being has limitless potential, like limitless. There's a conference I went to, and then one of the speakers was a motivational speaker and said, how many people in this room think that they're totally underutilized by their boss? Are you being challenged to your full potentiality? Over 90% of the people raised their hand. Mm-hmm. And I've seen it in organizations is we don't trust people. We feel like we have to manage them. And so, you know, there's obviously many of these things that you can do, but I think ritualizing your space and making it sacred of the divine. And then second, like, any business is successful because of humanity. You know, it's always better if you have a partner or two. It's always better. We encourage our graduates to work together if they can, but humanity has such amazing potential. And to recognize that, I think those would be two of mine, I would say, that can really help in a work environment. And Brenda, what wisdom do you have, my friend?
That's so you. Like, that's
like, that's so me.
He lives by. And no, he's such a great leader. The other thing I feel is, I just feel like we need to harness the potential of community more. Like, I feel like so many of our demons in our own minds occur because we're so disconnected from each other. And we compare with each other, like, well, this person is doing this well, and it's based off of what, like, social media or whatever it is. Like, really, how often do we have a conversation? Like, how are you doing? Like, you're so successful, but we don't know what the struggles they have, you know? And so I feel like so much of our, like, feeling of lack of accomplishment or lack of success is because of this, like, disconnect as a community. And I feel like if we just connect more, build more communities, exist, create that collective consciousness, in fact, I think that's a huge piece to just the healing of our relationship with wealth in all of its forms. And so it also gives us the power to work together and leverage each other's strengths and build communities together. You know, like, one of the things that I was telling you, Vanessa, before we did this podcast was, like, we were just connecting because you're going to be a guest in our Living Wisdom membership. And I was like, you know what I love about this conversation? It's like, it's the bridging of our communities. And I think we just need more and more of that. And people will feel like this, like, sense of support in life. What you have, you become more content with it. You become empowered to succeed in your goals as well. So I just feel like community and connection is something that we need to harness more and work harder at as a society.
Yeah, I love it. That's funny. That's all she talks about. Like, it's so hilarious. It's like we're in one of our meetings right now. Because Brenda's always like, we have to remember community. You know, that's right. You're right. So this is literally how we function. Like, she is the leader of that kind of energy and in our company, all across all of our business units. So very appropriate. Very appropriate.
I love it. Well, that's where we need more than one person, obviously, right? Like, because each of us, it can only hold really so much and be a channel for some specific things based on our design and karma and all of that. What I'm hearing, some of the standouts, and I want to get into Ayurprana because this relates directly to what you guys are speaking into, is this living energy that's woven through everything. And, you know, Mithesh, when you're talking about Saraswati, the wisdom, when you really bring that pantheon of the gods, the devas, the entities, makes a living being out of something that you are faced with or working with, you have no choice but to build relationship. And ritual cultivates relationship. There's so much about relationship, obviously, with community and cross-pollination, connecting our two communities. So it leads into Ayurprana, because I feel like this is kind of the essence of it. I mean, and even your membership, Living Wisdom membership. Can you share a little bit about this with our listeners and how this all culminates?
Ever since we've been young, we feel we can create containers for wellness journeys or self-exploration. So Ayurprana, when COVID happened, I think we were anti-online at some point. We're like, no, we want a retreat center. It's got to be physical. You got to have somebody. And then the COVID really taught us that however we can be connected, we should be connected, right? And so Ayurprana creates containers for people to discover themselves and to be on a wellness journey. And we do that through different memberships. So we have one called Living Wisdom. I just love it so much. It's like we have a challenge like every month where someone will be on like a juice fast or a PK, like a cleanse, or we have this nutrition challenge where everyone kind of cleans out their pantry. And we have like a studio here. We have like live cameras. Everybody's like cooking together, you know, 5 to 9 days a month. And then the people that are showing up are just like so enthusiastic. Like we encourage each other and we have like thought, like yourself, you're going to be a thought leader, you know, like in our community, which we're super excited about because you just seem like awesome. So just to kind of bring people in and have a structure, because the other thing that happened, we have, because we curate wellness journeys, we have like YTTs people can do, which are yoga teacher trainings, or they can come and do a panchakarma or a cleanse in our wellness retreat center that we have. But what happens in any spiritual kind of experience that we have, if we notice, it kind of falls off. So like, you know, let's say we're really, or a leadership training or a business training, within a month or two, you're probably only doing half of what you learned. And then a lot of times within 6 months, you might be only doing a quarter of what you learned. And then whenever we talk to our clients, they always say, how do we keep this going? We know it's so good for our health. Our health is improving. So we created this membership. So we wanted to get away from selling just classes and instead creating community. It's been a big shift in our company. Yeah. So Living Wisdom is like, let's be in community. We're going to integrate the classes that you need. We're going to integrate the sessions that you need. And I think that it's just been beautiful. It's been like fantastic. I don't know if you want to add, I'm probably missing a whole bunch of things.
No, it's perfect. Yeah. And the only other thing I'd add is like one thing that we've realized is that learning can't be static. Even a course, the way you approach it in one part of your life will be one way, another part of your life, a different way. One part of a year will be one way, another part of a year, a different way, because we're constantly changing. Our environment is constantly changing. And to be in harmony with these cycles of life, whether it's a day cycle, a year cycle, a lunar cycle, our year cycle, all these cosmic cycles, that's really like the root of Ayurveda or any holistic living tradition. Like really, like every holistic living tradition honors the cycles of the cosmos. And so this education, I didn't feel satisfied having a course that was taught the same way, no matter what time of the year. So to be able to take a concept and be like, okay, at this time of the year, at this time of the lunar cycle, this is how we apply it. So it's like this living, breathing way of existing is really the intention behind the membership. Like make the knowledge living and breathing.
Yeah. So we had a meeting yesterday where we're talking about the full moon. We had a whole meeting on how do we celebrate the full moon? And before we've been doing like meditations and then everyone's like, no, we want to party on the full moon. Like we need ceremony. We need song. And we're like, let's do it. You know, like, so I think that or when it's like the solstice. And I think that is a beautiful part of connecting with nature is like honoring the full moon. You know, a lot of the people in our membership, we say, make your ghee on your full moon, you know, dance on the full moon, like honor the solstices. And so I think it's been a really fun ride in getting people to join Living Wisdom. And we learn from everyone that joins and we try to create experiences that kind of connect people to the cycles and nature. And then the most important thing is we want to reduce suffering. And I think that if you are in the ebbs and flow of sunrise and sunset, you understand that there are seasons and seasonality and your body needs certain things at different times of the year. I think that does reduce suffering and it does give people like clearness of mind. So I think selfishly, we learn so much by being part of it, but yeah.
And from people like you know, like every month we have people like Vanessa joining.
How do you get smart, exciting, inspiring people and we just have excuses to talk to them?
Well, that's the whole reason why I started my podcast, right? And one of the biggest reasons is I get to connect with humans like you and to be inspired and cross-pollinate and share your teachings and wisdom. You also launched a platform just recently this year. Do you want to touch on that a little bit?
Brother, you go first.
Oh, gosh. You're forgotten then. So the Living Wisdom lives in this called Ayaprana Plus. And this app is really all about like telling timeless practices and stories that of people who have just like lived something so unique. We just want people to hear about it. And it's people you've heard about and people you haven't heard about. Like Jeremy, the person who does so much of our filming and directs a lot of this, he finds like the most amazing people. So I feel like you have all been describing it as the spiritual Netflix. So if you were to kind of take this idea of entertainment with a purpose, entertainment with inspiration, entertainment to just kind of unlock something different in you. That's really the intention. Just having a place where there are no agendas, there's no like censoring, there's no, none of that. You know, it's just like, here it is. Like whoever wants to share something, like we want to hear it and we want to share it with the world.
Yeah, there's beautiful stories on there, and all of them are very touching, and they're from different cultures and different, like, none of it's not just from the East. Like, we have like a wood carver that's been in the Appalachian Mountains, and no one knows him. Like, we just met the gentleman, but he seems so spiritual in his 80s, and he's just this amazing human being with all this wisdom. We have a story about a gentleman who's a musician who he's doing end of life care, and he would record their heartbeat, and then he would find their favorite song, and then they would create a song together with their heartbeat. And then it'd be something that that person would leave behind to their families, right? And it's so touching watching people go, like, the celebration of creating this music in your last month or your last six, and it creates such a graceful, and then you see people like laughing, creating this music while they're in hospital beds, while they're getting chemo. We have multiple stories on death, actually, and the celebration of life. And so I'm really glad you touched on this before. I think so much of media separates us. I'm Republican, I'm Democrat, I'm from this country, I'm from that country. And one of the things that we thought we want to put out there is, you know what? We are all light. We are all light. We have far more things in common than we have that are separate. So one of the things we want to do is tell these inspiring stories that really reflect on these moments in your life where you just go beyond the normal categorizations of was dividing us. So Ayurprana Plus tells a lot of the stories, like a spiritual Netflix and a spiritual Facebook, not Facebook, Instagram, that kind of got put together. We launched it in January and it's pretty neat. We just started out. So that's, you know, we'd love anyone's support.
Yeah, I saw just mini clips of some of the documentaries and they're so well done. They're beautiful. So I'm really excited to dive in even more. And this is just making me think too, we've talked a lot about this on the podcast. It's a running theme of Aquarian age or themes that come through Aquarius, no matter what your connection to the cosmos or stars. It's very apparent that technology, media, like, these are things that are really important in order for systemic change, because you're right, it's programming. There's so much that's out there that is just showing like a fraction of what actually is, and a distorted fraction at that. So I think it's a gift. It's really beautiful. And I'm excited to see how this just blossoms, you know, and explodes. Okay, I want to honor our time. I have so many more questions, but I feel like there is so much wisdom that already came through what you guys just shared. And before we share how people can connect with you, I have one question that I ask everybody who comes on the podcast. And I'd love to hear from each of you. And that's, how are you feeding your wild, or what is feeding your wild, whether it's body, mind, soul, or all of the above?
I like this idea. For about a year now, I created a sacred space in my garage. And, you know, it rains here a lot. So I was like, why are you turning it? You only have, it's only one car garage. It's like, you're going to get wet going to your car every day. I was like, no, I don't care. I'm turning my garage into a sacred space. So slowly, every few months, I've added something into there, you know? And so I have like an infrared sauna, and I have like a cold plunge. And then I have all this incense and books, and I've got a weight bench and yoga mats. And like, it's just like, it's really kind of been something that gives me insight into myself and the universe. Like, I inspire myself. And one of the things we talk about Ayurprana is consistency over intensity. And then really, like, every day doing something that, what does it feel, feeds my wild? Is that right?
Yeah.
I love that. So I'm feeding my wild by that space that I've created. It's my garage. And I absolutely love it. It makes me whole. What about you?
So my daughter, she is wild, and she is awesome wild. And she's like, in so many ways, like, opposite of me. Like, I am so, I can be so structured, you know, and like, I'm like, things to be a certain way and in a certain control. And so I've had this intention the last month or so to let her lead me. Mm-hmm. And so she wants to just do a dance party, do a dance party. If we're going to be a few minutes late to school, all good, you know, just like letting her lead me with her wild, wild self.
I love that. That's awesome.
That garage space sounds dreamy. Do you invite others into that space?
Absolutely. Absolutely. My buddy, one time I told him about it, and he literally showed up the next morning, and we like sat in my sauna together. And Brenda and Drew and her whole family, they're about to move like two doors down. So yeah, I think sharing sacred space is also beautiful too. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love these. These are giving me so many ideas. I'm sure the listeners as well. Where can everyone find you? I'll make sure to have all the links in the show notes, but what's the best way for people to find you?
Yeah. So our parent company's website, which is going to be redone soon, is liveayurprana.com. So liveayurprana.com. And on there, you'll learn about our main platform, Ayurprana Plus, that we were talking about, and the Living Wisdom membership as well.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for all that you do, who you are, how you're weaving this in your lived experience, like actually living it, which I think is so much more than what a lot of people do. They could talk all they want, but are you actually living it and infusing it into everything you're doing? And especially those places that are bifurcated and compartmentalized, like business and money. So thank you so much for coming on. And I'm really excited to share also with your community and continue this cross-pollination.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for platforming positivity. I think the world needs it. And we definitely honor and respect you.
Thank you.